And today I'll be continuing my series called Divine Encounters with God. And we'll be continuing today with the prophet Micah. And I guess I would just like to start off with a quick prayer here. Even though we're looking at Micah today, what I'm about to say is pretty much true for many of the prophets that we see in the Old Testament. Each prophet encountered God themselves. But additionally, through that prophet, the Israelites encountered God too. And we're looking at divine encounters. And many of the prophets, including Micah, we see God charging the Israelites of sins. Then they speak of judgment that's coming. But also, many of the prophets speak of a hope to be found in the future, a hope found in forgiveness. And we had already, and will continue to see, a stubborn, rebellious people who once were close and walking in the ways of the Lord God Almighty, the Israelites. But they strayed. They continued to go in the wrong direction. Initially, it was just straying from the truth or allowing certain things to pass. But after a while, they had gone so far that even when they were corrected in a direction they should be going, they had no desire. They had no desire to be close to the Lord again as they once had. They had become happy in their place of sin. They were content with where they were at and had no desire to have that close relationship to the Lord. Because doing that would require change. They didn't want to change. So turn with me to the book of Micah, and let's begin reading with the first few verses. I'll be starting with Micah chapter 1, verse 1. And you can either read along in your Bibles or read up on the screen. Micah 1:1. The word of the Lord that came to Micah of Moresheth during the reigns of Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah. The vision he saw concerning Samaria and Jerusalem. Hear, O peoples, all of you, listen, O earth, and all who are in it, that the sovereign Lord may witness against you, the Lord from his holy temple. Look, the Lord is coming from his dwelling place. He comes down and treads the high places of the earth. The mountains melt beneath him, and the valleys split apart, like wax before the fire, like water rushing down a slope. All this is because of Jacob's transgression, because of the sins of the house of Israel. What is Jacob's transgression? Is it not Samaria? What is Judah's high place? Is it not Jerusalem? It's interesting when we are introduced to Micah of how he's introduced. It's a little different than most prophets. It isn't Micah, son of so-and-so, or Micah from the tribe of one of the 12 tribes. You see, genealogy was very important to the Israelites. Yet here we see Micah's family isn't how he was known, but instead Micah is known from his location, the place where he was from. Moresheth is about 22 miles southwest of Jerusalem. It was what was called the lowlands. So that's really what we have to know about Micah, is where he's from. I can't tell you who his family was. But the important part is that Micah was hearing from the Lord. Micah was a prophet of God. And the word of the Lord came to Micah in the form of a vision that he saw concerning the southern kingdom of Judah. But we're also going to see a little bit of that vision, including the northern kingdom of Israel. And I've said on a number of times that Israel ended up dividing into two kingdoms. One was the northern kingdom of Israel. The southern one was the kingdom of Judah. So Micah is really talking to the southern kingdom of Judah. And he began prophesying before Israel was taken, the northern kingdom was taken into captivity, because the Assyrians take them into captivity. But in his ministry, he sees them go. He sees them taken into exile. But what Micah has to say is really to the southern kingdom, Judah. In verse 3, Micah tells them that the Lord is coming from his dwelling place. The Lord is coming down to meet his people. Now, if we think back to the time of Moses, we had all the Israelites were in slavery in Egypt, and we have the Israelites are really in bad shape, and they're crying out to God, come and save them. So God calls up Moses, and God uses Moses to take him and bring his people up out of captivity in Egypt. And God leads them to a place called Mount Sinai. And it was there on that mountain that God came down to meet his people and to make a covenant with them. Do many of you remember that story? Okay. A few of you might be shaking your head. Some of you are sleeping. Let's wake up a little bit. Okay, so what Micah is talking about here of God coming down from his dwelling place is nothing like the time he came down with Moses. I went through all of that just to say that. This is not the same. God is not coming down to make another covenant with his people. God is coming down this time in very much the opposite way that he came down with Moses. God is coming to... The people have been in rebellion of that initial covenant for hundreds of years. God is coming to bring the consequences. I was thinking in my office, well, what can I say to help us understand what God is doing here? I'm a father of 5 kids. Some of you have more kids, and God bless you for that. I'm not going to say this is me, but just imagine a child is misbehaving. Imagine that. And imagine another parent, or their parent. And so the parent tells this misbehaving child to stop what they're doing. Well, this child doesn't want to listen. So we have to, the parent ups it a little more. So instead of just telling this child to stop what you're doing, they change their tone. You know, this is serious. Stop it now. But sometimes kids are a little strong-willed. So let's say this one doesn't stop. They keep misbehaving, and so the parent then ups it a little more. Okay, if you don't stop it right now, you're going to go into a timeout or get a spanking, whatever one you think. Well, this little strong-willed child is not going to listen and is going to continue on, and so the parent has to up it again. If I have to come over there, you are not going to like what happens. Imagine the child doesn't change their misbehaving ways. And if you are someone on the sidelines looking, you're thinking, parent, just get up and take care of your kids. But the misbehaving child continues on. Maybe we'll have a count to 3. Maybe we'll have something else. But finally, the parent gets up and starts walking over to their child that's misbehaving. Now, imagine the child sees mom or dad coming and throws a royal fit because they know they're now going to get what they deserve. Imagine Maybe some of you can relate to seeing something like that. Maybe you can relate as a parent going through that. Maybe some of you can relate as being the child going through that. But here's the thing. God gave his people warning after warning after warning. God gave a lot of warnings. But his people didn't listen. God has done, and when God is coming down, God's done giving warnings. He's done talking. He has been patient, and he's given those warnings through multiple prophets. Micah is telling the people, God is on the way. Kind of like when you see mom or dad coming on the way, if you're the misbehaving child, they're on their way. They're not coming to give more warnings. Micah's telling the people, it's not going to go well for you. God's on his way. I think he was telling the people of Judah, hoping that when God arrives. Now, I know that God is everywhere all of the time. We understand that. I think Micah is using these words in a way for the people to relate to, because I truly believe that Micah and God, through God, was giving the people another opportunity where the people could have turned from their sins. I believe Micah thought that if the people were quick to change their ways, that God would show more mercy. But there's no mistake. God is on his way, and his troublesome, rebellious children will not like what's coming, even though it's well-deserved, and even though there had been plenty of warnings to change. We're told that when God arrives, he will come and tread the high places. High places were places of worship. Samaria is listed here. That was the northern kingdom, Israel place of worship. Jerusalem was the southern kingdom's place of worship. These places were not sanctuaries. Though they were places to once have honored God and worshiped him there, but because of sin, they will not be spared. The mountains will melt and the valleys will split open. These are poetic ways of saying serious destruction is coming to the land. The land will be laid to waste. Well, why is that? Sins of Israel as a whole, both northern and southern. They had a covenant with God, but they rebelled and chose to live as they wanted to. The covenant no longer meant what it should have. And I think it becomes easier over time for boundaries to erode. We know that when the covenant was made, there were many, many, many generations from when the covenant was made to when Micah is speaking to the people. See, over time, the boundaries were pushed over and over until there was little resemblance of what used to be. See, this is a warning for us, and I would venture to guess that all of us are aware of the changes that have happened in our own country within our lifetimes. Devaluing of life. People resolving conflict with violence first. Disrespecting authority, failing to respect elders, rampant sexuality, chemical abuse, people doing anything for money. Devaluing marriage, lack of integrity. All of these and many other areas I could go on for are what I have seen just in my short lifetime. Maybe for you, if your lifetime is a little bit longer than mine or a little shorter, you may have other things that you can identify that has changed in our country and in our culture. But you know, the general direction that we are going as a culture is not toward a reverence for God, but a departure from Him. Can things change in our culture and country? Well, sure they can. But as a nation, it must be widespread and it must be intentional. I think oftentimes we think, well, if we elect the right president, get the right Christian president in office, that'll change our country. Or if we get that Christian judge on the Supreme Court, that'll change everything. Yeah, we would like to see that happen. But is that going to change our country as a whole? Mm-mm. 2 Chronicles 7:14 says, "If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven, forgive their sin, and heal their land." It has to be widespread, intentional, and God's people influencing where they can influence. I can't change my nation or my culture. I can only change the area that I have influence over. And Micah paints a horrible picture of what things will look like after God starts handing out His judgment to the people. Let's continue reading on in Micah with verse 6 of chapter 1. "Therefore, I will make Samaria a heap of rubble, a place for planting vineyards. I will pour her stones into the valley and lay bare her foundations. All her idols will be broken into pieces. All her temple gifts will be burned with fire. I will destroy all her images, since she gathered her gifts from the wages of prostitutes. As the wages of prostitutes, they will again be used. Because of this, I will weep and wail. I will go about barefoot and naked. I will howl like a jackal and mourn like an owl. For her wound is incurable. It has come to Judah. It has reached the very gate of my people, even Jerusalem itself." See, Micah helps Judah see what's happened in the northern kingdom of Israel. Now, they've gone into exile now with the Assyrians, and I won't get into specifics there, but we're told that Samaria's wound is incurable. The northern kingdom has been destroyed, and because of its punishment, Micah mourns and weeps. Some have interpreted this Samaria's wound to be a plague, Samaria's plague, something that's incurable. It's kind of liking it to a plague that just spreads, incurable and spreads. Some even liken it to cancer, where it spreads and destroys. You see, Micah's talking about that sin, that spreading. Micah is mourning he's mourning the loss, mourning the destruction of the northern kingdom of Israel. But he's also lamenting the fact that Israel's plague of sin has reached the very gate of his own people in the southern kingdom of Judah. Now the consequences for Judah's rebelliousness has come. They have rejected God, so the destruction seen in Israel is coming to Judah as well. Micah then calls out, if you were to go on reading, Micah calls out various cities who won't be immune to the coming judgment. These cities are in the path of Babylon, who's coming to bring that destruction. And God is using a nation of Babylon to usher in His judgment. All of Judah has rebelled against God, but there is something unique about Micah. Reading through a number of these chapters, the uniqueness comes out in that Micah brings accusations against the leaders, against the wealthy, against the supposed godly people of Judah. He speaks to those of influence. And in chapter 2, we see a few of those things that they were doing. Micah chapter 2, verse 1. Woe to those who plan iniquity, to those who plot evil on their beds. At morning's light, they carry it out because it is in their power to do it. They covet fields, and they seize them, and houses, and take them. They defraud a man of his home, a fellow man of his inheritance. In these verses, we see the offenders were likely a smaller group of greedy and powerful people. They spent their evenings plotting and planning. They would scheme of how they could take away land and take away homes, take away these things from their rightful owners. You see, the old covenant protected those things. It protected the inheritance of the people and the tribes. Yet this group of greedy, influential people coveted what was not theirs, and because of their influence and wealth, they could take it. There was no thought of a person's home or livelihood. But in God's eyes, everyone is equal. Just because one person has more material wealth than another, God still looks at them as though they are the same. For those who think that they can do what they please, Micah is telling them, God is saying, woe to you who do that. Let's read some more, Micah chapter 3, verses 1 through 2. Then I said, listen, you leaders of Jacob, you rulers of the house of Israel, should you not know justice? You who hate good and love evil, who tear the skin from my people and the flesh from their bones. God is pointing out leaders here, but in a few verses, he has something to say about those who claim to be from God. So it's not just leaders. We're talking about people claiming to be prophets. Let's look at verses 5 through 7. This is what the Lord says. As for the prophets who lead my people astray, if one feeds them, they proclaim peace. If one does not, they prepare to wage war against him. Therefore, night will come over you without visions and darkness without divination. The sun will set for the prophets, and the day will go dark for them. The seers will be ashamed and the diviners disgraced. They will all cover their faces because there is no answer from God. These prophets, what they were doing is, if someone would give them food or give them gifts, then they would give them a positive response. But if someone didn't give them anything, then they would give them a negative one. They were prophets of greed, not prophets from God. Being put in the dark meant that these people would never hear anything from the Lord. Reading on verse 11 through 12 of chapter 3, her leaders judge for a bribe, her priests teach for a price, and her prophets tell fortunes for money. Yet they lean upon the Lord and say, is not the Lord among us? No disaster will come upon us. Therefore, because of you, Zion will be plowed like a field, Jerusalem will become a heap of rubble, and the temple hill a mound of overgrown thickets. See, everyone is looking out for themselves here. Greed influenced the influencers. Money became their god. I think I could probably go to great lengths to really pull apart many of these scriptures and even more found in Micah, but we'll still end up with one place, and that's the two greatest commandments. Matthew 22:37. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. All of Micah that we're reading about today It all fits right here in these two commandments. Israel and Judah lost sight of what was so important. They may have still believed they were a godly nation, but they were far from it. Prophets were paid to give good reports, and when a true prophet came to tell them what God was really saying, they were silenced and told not to teach such things. You know something? The church is going to figure this out, but there is a judgment coming. People on earth are going to know that hell is a real place. And I know that there are people that will speak on TV. There will be, who knows, maybe a next door neighbor that will question God in hell, asking, would God really send someone to a place of eternal suffering? Would God really do that? Kind of sounds like Adam and Eve in the garden with Satan. But we're seeing here in Micah that we've all been given plenty of warnings. We've all been told something. Israel and Judah, they did not think that God would come and bring destruction to their kingdoms. They thought because God made a covenant long ago that God was among them, that God would never destroy those kingdoms. They thought because God made a covenant long ago that God was among them, that God would never destroy those kingdoms. That's what they thought. Micah is telling them, God's coming. He's going to do it. But these prophets, these leaders are saying, if God's among us, there's only going to be peace. Don't worry about it. Don't listen to Micah. You see, God did make a covenant with his people, but the people didn't keep it. The Israelites made a choice. And for us, when it comes to hell, if we reject Jesus Christ, we are making a choice. Is God sending me to hell? I've made a choice. God's giving me a way to not go. Jesus Christ is returning. And when he gets here, it will be too late. The time to follow Jesus is now. The time to make changes in your life to be more Christ-like is now. Not later, right now. Maybe many of us have heard those two greatest commandments a lot in our lifetimes. But have you really sat and meditated on it? Really thought about what these mean? To love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your strength is more than just loving him for an hour once a week. It's not obeying when it's convenient. It's putting God's will above our own. Do our words and actions reflect a devotion to God every minute of every day? And if not, then there's work to be done. Now, will we be perfect? No, we're not going to be perfect. There's always something to work on. Only when we get to heaven will we be perfect. But it's not an excuse to keep sinning. That's not an excuse. You see, the people Micah is speaking to were good with their words, but they were good with their words about God, but their actions showed something else. Their actions toward each other were not motivated by love toward each other. Instead, they were motivated by money and power. You see, instead of asking, how can I love my neighbor, these leaders were asking, what can I take? What can I get from my neighbor? As we celebrate our nation this week and remember the independence of our great nation, let us be in prayer for our nation, praying that our nation would be motivated by a love and a reverence toward God, and also a love toward each other. There are many people of influence in our nation to pray for. Oftentimes when we think about praying for our nation, we think about praying for our president and for the Senate and the House. But there's a lot that we can pray for. Not just in politics, but positions of authority. But not just that. Guess what? Even you and I have influence in various places. Parents, teachers, church workers, people who just work in other jobs with other people, voters, the list could go on. Almost all of us have some influence somewhere at some point in time. Let us use our areas of influence to show reverence to God and to love each other. Let our small moments be used to encourage and build up others. You see, I can't change my nation, but hopefully I can positively influence something that's around me. Let us take those small moments and show reverence to God. For the Lord is concerned with how we live under His lordship and how we treat each other. In closing, I'd like to close with one last verse just to kind of think on. Galatians chapter 5, verse 13. You, my brothers, were called to be free, but do not use your freedom to indulge the sinful nature. Rather, serve one another in love. The entire law is summed up in a single command: love your neighbor as yourself. This really just impacts our relationship with each other here. Serve one another in love.